Hey, it's the Bruins Benders Podcast, Season 3, Episode 20 with Maddie and Smitty, brought to you on the Inside the Rink Podcast Network. InsideTheRink.com is your one-stop shop for all your NHL, ECHL, AHL news, insight, and analysis. Follow on X at Inside_the_rink. Download the Inside the Rink app for extensive Bruins coverage. And if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit the like button and hit subscribe to the Inside the Rink YouTube page. Here is some information on how to sign up for ESPN Plus.
Yeah, you can sign up for ESPN Plus at insidetherink.com/ESPN today so you don't miss any NHL action. Get all the NHL playoff games. There's MMA, there's college sports, all kinds of stuff on there. So sign up for that. You can bundle it up with Hulu and Disney Plus if you feel like it. But I say, you know, fuck the kids and just get the ESPN Plus for yourself. So you can sign up at insidetherink.com/ESPN.
You get some ACC tournament action. BC Eagles, Clemson. Tonight, 9:30 p.m. All they have to do is win 5 games in 5 days.
BC. Oh yeah, yeah. How many people do you think are at that game? Like 6, 7? Ten.
By 9:30, yeah, people are going home and going to bed.
I think so. Yeah,
it's a long day of
friends and family. So that's a friends and family game. I think that's the only people in the stands left. Yeah, is friends and family.
I'm gonna go DraftKings. I'm gonna go Clemson by 15.
All right,
sign it up. Yeah, so go ahead and do that. We have a special guest this week on the pod, and it's Lance Schrock, and he's a credentialed Columbus Blue Jackets writer for Inside the Rink. Lance, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Sure, absolutely. And so Andrew Peak was acquired by the Bruins. He's a defenseman who's been playing for the Blue Jackets. I guess just give us a take on what the Bruins fans can expect from Peak.
Well, Peak's got the size to him. You know, he's like 6'3", almost 200 pounds. And he's just really starting to get into his own and playing more physical, in my opinion. I mean, last two seasons, his hits have increased. And he's starting to play to his size. And you know, he's a pretty talented skater. I'd say with the puck, maybe not quite as much. You know, I think that you guys have a good deal here. You know, his contract's going to go through 2026. I think that he'll play that contract fine. I actually, when he was for the Blue Jackets this year, I thought maybe he should have gotten some more playing time. He's only got 23 games played so far this season. Been a log jam of players there for the Jackets. But, you know, he's got a decent shot. That's not his thing. He's not there to score goals. He's there to block. That's like one of his biggest strengths is blocking shots and getting hits.
So, why did he kind of fall out of favor in Columbus? Like, why wasn't he playing, you know, within that logjam of guys where he, you know, are they looking to get a little younger back there? Or, I mean, he's still kind of a young guy. So how did he kind of fall out of favor in Columbus?
That's a good question. I mean, he is younger. You know, 25 years old. He will be 26 on Sunday.
Okay.
But there is, like I said, a logjam of players coming up. We got guys like David Yerichek, Stanislav Svozil, Denton Matejchuk coming up through the Cleveland Monsters and whatnot. So there's just a logjam. Also, recently, you know, Blue Jackets acquired Provorov for this season. Ivan Provorov, Damon Severson. Gave them pretty big contracts, and that's just it. It's not that he fell out of favor, so to speak. It's just that in the last few years, that position has just been more available. There's been less competition, especially with last year, Blue Jackets, I think, had the most man games lost in entire NHL, tons of injuries. And so he saw an 80 game season last year. So, yeah, like I said, it's a good question. It's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly the reason why. It's not that he was playing bad, just other people were playing better.
You know, the Bruins do need some defensive help on the right side. They do need a little bit more, I guess. We've been talking about this on the pod. More nastiness, more, you know, just face washes and scrums in front and protecting the goalies and a little more sandpaper to play against, you know, that whole thing and standing up for teammates and all of that and all of the things that the Bruins opponents seem to have. The Bruins have been lacking in the last few years, especially in the defensive core where they really try to push the puck. They're really focused on offensive skills and in the rush and that type of thing and not getting back to the old days of guys like Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid and guys who would really be tough to play against. They'd fight you. They'd get in your face. They'd be nasty. So the Bruins really kind of need that. It sounds like Peak isn't really that guy. He might be someone who's a little more physical than, say, a Brandon Carlo or that type of thing. The thing that really I don't love about it is the contract. Like, it's 2.75 for a guy who doesn't give you anything really offensively. But there is a little bit of a buyout, I guess, action there where they can buy out at like a third or something if they don't like him. But they must see something in him that has them take kind of a flyer where they took all the contract, you know, from his contract. So I'm just sort of, you know, he's only played 23 games, didn't play for a very good, you know, for a very good team with Columbus, couldn't really crack the lineup much. So to me, it's just, I don't know what to really expect from him. And do you see, I guess, have you seen ability where if he's coached a certain way or in the right environment that he can actually improve a little more and flourish a little more?
Yeah. Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think in part as well this year, as many people are aware, the Blue Jackets were going to have an experienced head coach. And instead, we get another first-year coach with Pascal Vincent after the whole, you know, Babcock thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that may have some part to play in this, mm-hmm. where he's there's been over like 60 different line combinations this year from the head coach, and I think he's still finding his footing, trying to figure out who's fitting where, and I think he just didn't know what to do with Peak. I do think he's starting to play grittier as he keeps going, but yeah, that's really all I can think about with that. He's had some pretty good seasons. He's played full 82 game season before as well too.
So
recently the team, you're right, he's had a hard time cracking it, but
yeah, maybe
I think that's kind of coaching.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe the coaching change and the coach wants to go in maybe a little bit of a different style than what Peak brings to the table. You know, you mentioned some of those other guys, you know, and another thing with coaching is a lot of times they want their own guys. You know, Peak was there before the coaching staff was there. So, you know, maybe he just kind of fell out of favor with the coaching staff and they wanted to kind of go in a different direction, you know, as far as the style of play and so forth. So hopefully when he gets to the Bruins, you know, and he's with this culture and with their defensive system, you know, maybe he'll fit in that a little bit better than he would have in Columbus, I think.
Yeah. And I do think there's a little bit might be kind of who's in front of the net sometimes too, and how he's kind of running things on the ice as well.
Were you surprised, Lance, that the Blue Jackets didn't do more at the deadline? I mean, where is this team going? And they make this trade. They get Jakub Zboril. You know, Zboril was a guy kind of like Peak. Couldn't crack the lineup for ages. Last year, he played like 20-ish games. A lot of just scratches. Had some promise. He's a former first-round pick. They looked like he was going to really start cracking the lineup. He had an ACL injury. Then he had another sort of bad hit where he kind of took a step back again, then never saw the ice again. Yeah. On the NHL team. So you get Zboril. I don't know what kind of role, if you've heard anything about a role or a chance that he might get there. And then were you surprised that they didn't do more?
No. And the Blue Jackets just recently got rid of their longtime general manager for the last decade, Jarmo Kekalainen. Mm. And so the interim GM is the president of the Blue Jackets, John Davidson, you know, former New York Ranger goalie. And he came out and said, he doesn't want to make all these big moves and then get a GM in, and he's already made the moves that they should have been making. He wants them to be able to come in and make their own team and do that how they want to. So I'm not surprised. Jack Roslovic was one that went. He was the only pending UFA at the end of the season. No surprise. He is traded. Andrew Peak, I was not surprised. He's a name that had been coming up throughout this year, especially with how much he was sitting on the bench. It felt like maybe these talks around the league may have been going on for longer. So maybe that was part of the lack of playing time, keeping him healthy. I don't can't say for 100% certainty. And you're right. He's very similar to Zboril. Not a first round pick, but he was picked 34th overall in the second round. And that was the year that, you know, Austin Matthews, Laine, and PL Luc Dubois were picked 1, 2, 3. Former captain of Notre Dame. He's got some leadership skills. He knows what it takes to be on a championship team. But Zboril, I don't think, is going to see the NHL ice here either. He's a very similar player to Peak. I think that so the Cleveland Monsters are doing well this year. It's the AHL affiliate for the Blue Jackets. They're doing very well. They're going to be in the playoffs. They have a chance to go for the Cup. And I think Zboril is just a seasoned veteran that can help, because the Blue Jackets are going to be calling up some of those younger defenders I mentioned earlier. So That's kind of where I think he fits.
Yeah. Well, Lance, we really appreciate you joining us on the pod, and we wish you luck. We'll keep an eye on the Columbus Blue Jackets information that you bring to InsideTheRink.com, and it's good to have you on, and maybe we'll have you on again down the road when something comes about.
Yeah, man. I appreciate y'all letting me or having me out here on the show, too. It's always nice, talking with other teams from the league.
Sure. All right, Lance. Thanks so much, bud.
Awesome. Thank y'all.
Thanks a lot.
You too. All right, so there you have it. Jakub Zboril is still in witness protection.
He's not going to get a chance there either.
To a straight.
I'm not really that surprised. If you're trading a guy who only gets 23 games at the NHL level for another guy who can't get ice at the NHL level for the Bruins, I find it hard to believe that all of a sudden he's going to crack their lineup. It's not like he was tearing it up in the AHL. So it's probably a change of scenery trade for both guys. Peak's a little bit bigger. He's a right shot instead of a left shot. And you get a little bit more size with him and hopefully, a little more nastiness. And he does block a ton of shots. He has a lot of hits. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of physicality he does actually bring to the table.
Sure. All right, rapid review. Couple of extremes this week for the Bruins. You can say that. The Penguins came in, and they're kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And the Bruins just took it to them, much more superior, obviously. 5-1 win, fairly easy. But Linus Allmark was a story. He responded really well to the supposed trade and the blocking of the trade. Came in, played really, really well. And then really handled it well. He was kind of candid, but also it looked like the team really kind of rallied around him and helped him get through that thing. And it looked like he really didn't miss a beat and didn't have really, lingering effects from it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the help from the team, he said that he had a pretty long conversation with Patrice Bergeron about the trade deadline. And he also said he got a really nice text from Charlie McAvoy that kind of made him emotional, that it was probably something along the lines of, we love you and we want you to be here and, kind of a thing. So it sounds like the leadership new and old of the Bruins kind of got him through that. And then he really responded during the game. And I think Pittsburgh was kind of reeling still from the trade of Gensel. They really missed him, I think, in that game. And I think they'll miss him overall, because he was Crosby's kind of, right-hand man, so to speak. And all of a sudden you're playing with Michael Bunting, who just goes to the front of the net and annoys people. It's not really the same level of player. So, I think the team in Pittsburgh was kind of reeling from that trade still. And them going in the wrong direction anyway, that certainly didn't help.
I'm really interested to see where they go from here. I mean, they really invested on those. It's like the big three. It's like the old Celtic, the 90s Celtics.
Yeah.
Like they invested to keep the big three, and then they really don't have any chance to really improve the team much, and they're just stuck in this mediocrity now. And what do you do with these big contract vets?
Well, now they have a big four, too, because Carlson's right, there with a huge contract, too.
It's a huge percentage of your salary cap for those four guys that are all aging.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I don't know where you go from here with them. And they really don't seem to have a ton of young talent coming through because they've been decent. So they picked down the draft,
right,
similar to the Bruins.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one for Pittsburgh. I don't know where they go from here, but the Bruins get that win. And then they turn around and they absolutely lay a massive dump at home against the St. Louis Blues 5-1. Now the officials were bad, but man, there's some people who just want to rip on the officials, and that was the whole thing. That was not a great effort at all.
No.
Monty talked about it, too. Like, it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, they were a step slow in the beginning of the game, and yeah, they caught a couple of breaks early. You know, the puck deflects off the referee skate right to the slot, and they put one home. But, I mean, you get what you sow kind of thing there. Like, they didn't start the game well. They played the entirety of that first half of the first period in their own end, and eventually it caught up to them. And then they take a couple of penalties, and then they score on the two-man advantage, and now you're down 2-0 to a team that doesn't give up leads. And it just snowballed from there. They get to 3-0, and then, you know, you have the whole controversy with the replay and the offsides, and, you know, we can say it again. I've said it a million times. I hate replay. I hate the offsides review. I think it should be gone. I don't think it helps the league at all. You know, you're spending all that time looking. What should we do? And then they tell you the rule they used, and they interpreted the rule wrong, and it cost the Bruins a goal. So, I mean, sure, yeah, you could say, oh, if it didn't hit his skate, you know, that goal doesn't count. If they didn't call the penalty, you know, that goal doesn't count. And then it's 1-1. Yeah. Well, not really.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
breaks in games happen. You know, you make your own breaks. It's not like the Bruins were playing the whole game, and then all of a sudden, St. Louis end the whole game, and then all of a sudden are couple things go the other way, and then all of a sudden you're down. Like, that wasn't the case. The Blues outplayed them in this game, and you know, they hit a bunch of posts. They had a bunch of high danger chances in the slot. It could have been 9-1. I mean, it could have been 9-3. I mean, who knows? But it was not a close game. The Bruins didn't play well, and their defensive structure was for shit. It was.
And it was a stark contrast from what we thought they figured out.
Yeah.
And then they hadn't by just having another, you know, just a bad, you know, careless defense and just being out of position and just not handling the puck well, and all the issues that happen when they lose happened. They always seem to lose the same way. Like, they just got out of their identity and they just play a different way, and it just never seems to work. Seven Chirps is sponsored by Lomps Brewing, and it's a brewery and tasting room in downtown Woonsocket, Rhode Island, specializing in small batch ales and lagers. It's open 7 days a week, and you can use the coupon code SPORTS for 10% off your online order at lompsbrewing.com. And also follow them at Lomps Brewing on social media for new beers and events. Chirp 1, Charlie McAvoy made some post-game comments about Jim Montgomery thinking that the Bruins aren't a rush team. And then he said afterwards, you know, I think we can be more of a rush team. And it really struck me, because this is kind of what we've been talking about with them, is that their identity should be defense first, goaltending out, handle the puck well, not just giving the puck away, not just trying to advance it too quickly, like being a lot more solid in their own end and being a little more careful in their transition. And they seem to play well that way. It's when they think they're a rush team, or they think they're some more talented offensive team, or more of a high powered offensive team, that they get in trouble. And these post-game comments by McAvoy kind of struck me as, I think the players think they're something that they're not to some extent.
I think you're right. I think the Bruins as a team, as players, think they're more offensively talented than they actually are.
Right.
I think that's true. I think
they can play like they did last year.
Yeah. And they can't. I mean, and right. they can't. That's not the way they can win games this year. They simply don't have the same type of depth. Yeah, you have some guys having career years, but you also have a team that loses the majority of their faceoffs, and so they lose possession a lot. And that's cost them goals in games. So they really need to clean up their own end first and then focus on, you know, their defensive structure and system. And when they do that, they create turnovers, which leads to their offense. If they right. just think they're going to go up and down with the Torontos and the Floridas and the Edmontons of the world and win games 7-6, they are sorely, sorely mistaken. The other problem I have with those comments is a disagreement between the coach and the player where they think the styles might be a little different. And that right. really alarms me because it's like, are the guys buying into what he's saying?
True. Right.
You know, it, so yeah. it, so then it's the question of is Montgomery the right guy to coach the team? If they're not listening to what he's mm-hmm. saying, as far as this is the way we need to play, then mm-hmm. that's an even bigger problem. You know,
right. I really, you know, in the last couple of weeks, I really think that Julian would be a better coach for this team. And I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But I think that if they played a more conservative style defensively and with more, you know, more of the, you know, let's win 0-0 kind of thing, that they would actually probably have more success. I think they would. But, you know, not that I want Julian, not that I want to see that style or anything, but I think more so like that. But I think you're right. The whole buying in thing makes me a little nervous too. And that's why if they go into the first round series against Toronto and try to go bullet for bullet against them and they lose 4-1, like then you really have to make a serious decision on what the philosophy is, what you want it to be, what it can be, like mm-hmm. be realistic about who you are and then who coaches that.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. And I think that it could come to that. Like, can this guy really coach that way, get that out of this team, or do they have to change? And we'll talk about the core later.
Well, yeah. I mean, it also comes down to the whole, you know, what's your philosophy as a team? And we've talked about this before, the hard to play against thing. Like,
what does that even mean?
Yeah. I mean, right. what does that mean? Do they have the right style of player or do they have the right coach to coach that style, whatever it is? And it was like you were saying, you know, we'll see, you know, if that, you know, comes to fruition or not, but there's some things there, underlying kind of things that make you a little nervous about you know, what's going on in there.
Sure, absolutely. Chirp 2, Linus Ullmark trade talks will be revisited in the offseason by reports. He did veto the trade that reportedly was to L.A. What can they get for him when it is revisited in the offseason? And will it be the same value as now? And can it be, if he's not the number one and doesn't play all that much in the postseason, does that change things?
I think that can change things. If Swayman gets the net and Ullmark doesn't see the net at all in the postseason,
right.
You know, how do you know if he can be your number one? I guess you would go off the last couple of years probably. But in those 2 years, he was, you know, essentially kicked out of the Nets in the postseason. So, yes. You know, I'm not sure how that all comes together. I think probably you would have been better off making the deal now. Obviously mm-hmm. he has the no move clause so he can veto it and it's his right. And he should exercise that right. I mean, you know, it's in his contract. He has every right to do that. I don't begrudge him for that at all. If he, you know, doesn't want to move his family in the middle of the season, you know, he's earned that. So, I don't have any problem with that, but I think the Bruins, maybe missed the boat here where they could have looked for some other teams that, they could have possibly got something from, for Ullmark and kind of improved themselves here, especially if they're planning on, riding Swayman, you know, this year and for the long term. I think that would have only made sense because now you go into the offseason, you know, he's a year closer to free agency and you know, who's to say if those teams don't address their goalie needs in other places or through the draft or whatever the case may be, and you might be kind of stuck either with less compensation back in return or no compensation at all, and then you got to let the guy walk. Right. So, you know, I guess only time will tell whether or not they botched this, but there's a possibility they could end up with less than they would have got if they had found a trade partner at the deadline.
I would have traded him last offseason.
Me too.
And instead they went, and we talked about this, instead they went, we're going to do straight platoon, which didn't last like we thought it wouldn't. And then, you know, here we are. Almark doesn't play as well. Swayman's playing much better. He gets the net, and he probably will have the net. I heard this discussion on sports radio. Do you think the team considers him selfish for using his veto? And I say that has to be the most ludicrous thing in the world if they do, because they gave it to him. It's like your employer giving you 4 weeks vacation, and then you take it all, and they get pissed.
Right.
Like, it's just like, look, like you gave me this no trade clause. Like, if you're handing him out like candy, then they have value. And this is the value it has.
Right.
I'm not going to LA midseason.
Yeah. Okay?
I'm 29. I have young kids. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that's why you do it. That's why you have it. So,
yeah.
Maybe don't give it out as much.
Right. I mean, so, you can't begrudge a guy for giving him, you know, utilizing a clause that you put into his contract.
Right. And they do it. I mean, they give it to everybody.
Sure.
Like in some form.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. So I think that they can probably get a decent value. I'm not sure what that is. I mean, there's been reports about certain prospects or young guys and a pick and stuff. And there's been talks about what might've been the package, and it was okay. It was fine, but I don't think you're going to get, you know, for a 29-year-old goaltender, you know, who in the last year of his contract, like I'm not sure. And then the other thing is how valuable is a, you know, a number one goalie? Like if it's almost like in the NFL and quarterbacks, like if you have the top five quarterbacks, then yeah, they're super valuable. Pay them all the money.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you don't, it's almost like, well, we'll kind of have this guy and this guy backing up. And so the goalie is almost the same to me in the NHL. Is like, if you don't have, you know, Martin Brodeur, then you just kind of ride the hot goalie and try to figure it out. And maybe you strike gold in the playoffs. So yeah. I don't know how valuable the guy is.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I think the hot goalie thing is perfect. I mean, there's teams that won cups with hot goalies that, you know, are middling and not, you know, any kind of an elite goaltender. And then you get guys that are elite goalies that have won cups too. So, you know, and those are the guys that usually get paid. So it'll be interesting to see what they end up getting. I would like to see the Bruins, if they can make a trade for him, is either get a pick or a prospect, fairly high pick or prospect, and then a young, you know, I guess on the come NHL kind of player, with some upside. That's what I would like to see them get in return. You know, if it was Jersey, a guy like, you know, Dawson Mercer, I don't think they would trade him necessarily, but a guy like that, and then maybe a pick or a prospect, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see how it ends up shaking out, but, I think they may have missed the boat here in maximizing that asset.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, there are some J.S. Jaguars and Archer Urbays and, you know, Cam Wards and guys, you know, that just get hot.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I don't know. It's a good argument. All right. Chirp 3. Did the Bruins do enough at the deadline? Should they have done more, less, or nothing at all?
I mean, there's different ways of looking at that. I don't particularly think that they're a Stanley Cup contender. So I probably would have done, if it was me, I probably would have done a little of both, to try to add some to the team for this year and then subtract guys that you were going to lose anyway, or don't plan to re-sign. So to me, you know, and, you know, the cap obviously plays a big part in this. You know, if you don't have the cap space, you can't go out and make all these moves, which the Bruins didn't. But I'm looking at like guys like JVR, like could you trade him for a third or a fourth round pick? He hasn't done anything at all
right.
in like
right.
3 weeks. He's been skating right. around and passing the puck to the other team and just yeah, hasn't really
quickly.
Yeah. yeah. And he hasn't really done anything to help you. So that, in my opinion, was a guy that they could have traded. I would have traded Grizzlick for a pick just to get rid of the cap thing. Now, whether you could have done that or not, I don't know. Same with Forbort. I would have traded him, you know, obviously before the injury. I don't think guys are going to be wanting, you know, an injured Derek Forbort, but you know, there's another guy, you know, UFA that maybe you could trade it for a low round pick, that could help somebody. So I would have got rid of those kind of UFA guys. DeBrusque is a different story. You know, to me, you kind of have to ride with them, or get a similar type of guy back. You're not going to give him away for a pick because you need the scoring. Your depth is already bad. So unless you can get a similar guy that's going to produce points, a top six guy back in return, I don't think, you know, I think they were smart not to do anything with him. And then, you know, I like that they added some toughness. I think he will eventually work out. I think it might take a little time for him to get used to the Bruins system. But I like the fact that he's big, that he blocks shots, that he has a lot of hits. You know, I don't know if he's in the front of the net scrum type of guy, but the fact that he was a captain and a leader, I think, is another thing that's good. I mean, you know, another character guy. So all those things, in my opinion, are good. I don't love the money, like you said, especially for a guy that's coming off, you know, a couple of, you know, this season, he didn't play much at all. Last season, I mean, it was a bad team, but he was minus 41. Like that they were brutal. So, you know, is that a confidence problem? Is that he needs a change of scenery? We'll see. But, you know, so there's some things there that I do like the toughness and so forth, but I'm interested to see how that shakes out going forward. I think he'll end up being a good player for them, and he'll probably be their right D for the next couple of years. You know, it will be interesting to see what happens.
For sure. And I think that I would have traded JVR and Grizzlick for sure. And I think you could have gotten something. I don't know what it is. Low round pick, something.
Yeah.
I would have traded both of those guys. I mean, Forbort would have been a tough sell probably. So those two, definitely, you know, maybe Del Lauco or someone else who's just kind of around, you know, who needs to be, who just isn't in the future. Or you may have a change of scenery kind of guy. I don't know. But I definitely would have done those two things. I mean, I would have tried to sell a little more. But the problem with that is then the team doesn't think you believe in it, which you don't. And then, you know, then you hit a swoon probably. And that kills the morale in your supposed cup run. So it was a tough one. And I don't think... Again, I think Don Sweeney wants to win trades. I think he has a hard time with hockey trades. Mm-hmm. And this peak trade was actually a little more hockey-ish because it is a risk. It is.
Yeah, because of the risk. Money.
It's not a ton, but, yeah, a little bit, but
because the money's
a risk.
Sure.
All right, so chirp number four. The Bruins seem to have figured out their defensive issues, but then gave up 5 goals to the Blues. Was it just one bad game, or are there deeper problems in the back end?
I guess I'm going to chalk it up as one bad game, but I'm like 51-49 one bad game because they've been giving up leads all year long. Yeah, I mean, it's not a good situation. Like, I feel like they figured it out. You know, they played a lot of games in not many days. So, you know, maybe that played a factor. We'll see how they come out tomorrow night in Montreal. I think Peak's going to get into the lineup. So some guys are under the weather and frankly played badly in the last game. Shattenkirk and Lowry in the last game were terrible according to the metrics. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But I do think that they seem to have figured it out. But then you get the question of the buy-in, like the McAvoy comments after the game with, you know, I think we can be a transition to, and they can, you know, to some degrees. When he's on the ice, they can be.
Sure, right.
You know what I mean? Or with right. You know, but not
three other lines.
Yeah, but there's
two other pairs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If it's McAvoy passing it to Coyle or Zaka, sure, you can be a transition team. But you know, I don't think that works that way with, you know, up and down the entire lineup, we'll say. So they really have to focus more on their defensive zone and clean that up before they can worry about transitioning the puck and quick ups, you know, out of the zone.
Yeah. I meant to ask you this. You think the peak move is a Neely move again? It's one of those, like, I'm going to put my thumb on this a little bit, try to get a little more of a defensive-minded, tougher guy there, because he tends to do that occasionally, like, go get Nick Foligno, go get Nick Ritchie, go get, you know, Zach Rinaldo. Every once in a while, he kind of puts his thumbprint on.
Well, I mean, I feel like going, I mean, they even said it in training camp this year. They wanted to be, you know, in front of both nets, they want it to be harder to play against. So defensively, clearing guys out in front of their own net, and then offensively getting to the dirty areas. I don't think they really addressed it coming into the season. You know, JVR is a low net front guy, but he's not a physical guy. He's not a banger
it's
at
not
all.
The nucleus. It's not the nucleus.
No. So, yeah, I mean, it's really the Bruins skill players have to play tougher is what it is, plain and simple. Those guys have to know Pasternak's, your Marchands, Coyles. Mm-hmm. Those guys have to play more physical. When they were playing, when that Marchand, Coyle, DeBrus line came out the other night and were banging bodies after Marchand got cross-checked in the throat, they were an entirely different team. They were an entirely different team. Now, can they sustain that at the age of Marchand and Coyle over a 2 or 3 month, you know, playoff run? Probably not. Probably not. But it's really up to those guys to be, you know, more physical, even though that's not really in their nature. When they play that way, they're better. That's what it comes down to.
Right. Chirp number five. If they do have an early first round exit, do you think the Bruins should change the core of the team, or if that's needed?
Another early exit, they do need to. And whether that's coach, whether that's some of their top six guys. I mean, obviously, you're not trading Pasternak. They probably wouldn't trade Marchand. They're not going to trade McAvoy. But after that, I feel like anybody could be and should be, you know, up. They should be willing to trade those guys.
I agree. I think the guy that I would really look at would be like Lindholm.
Yeah.
Maybe trying to deal Hampus Lindholm, who doesn't have a terrible contract. It's long, but it's not a high number when you think about
six and a half
and cruising. Yeah, it's not bad. So, and he could go to a team with a different style and probably play better. He probably could. So Hampus Lindholm would be a guy. Maybe Charlie Coyle would be a guy. Maybe those two guys would be people that I would think about dealing. I'd probably let DeBrusk walk. And then you really change some of the core. If you let Coyle and Lindholm and DeBrusk go, I mean, that's three guys who are in the top, you know, 15 guys on the team.
Yeah, I would probably,
those are good players.
I would probably move on from Zacha before Coyle. But that's just me. I think Coyle's kind of stepped up more this year than Zacha has. And,
Even with the 5 year difference in age.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Zacha's come on lately, but for a while he was doing nothing. Like he was just out there skating around.
Nothing.
So I don't know. He just kind of has that where he's never really fully lived up to his potential. I feel like you could probably get more for Zacha because of his age and because the fact that he was a high draft pick. I think, you know, there's some opportunity there maybe to get a little bit more than you could for a guy like Coyle. But, like I said, I'd be willing to trade either one of them in the right deal. You give me the right deal and I'd be willing to trade either one. But, we'll see what ends up happening in this playoffs. But it is getting to the point where, you know, if they have another first round exit, it's like you all of a sudden now you can't get past the second round. And it's been since what, 2019? You went to the cup and then since then you've struggled. So, you know, it's getting to the point now where, you know, it should get off the pot. Like, you got to, you know, you got to start winning some playoff rounds here. And is Montgomery the right guy to lead you forward, too?
Yeah, that's the other thing. And Coyle has 2 years left on the deal. It looks like he submits an 8-team no trade list now. And then in the last year, it's a 3-team no trade list. So there's some opportunity there if you wanted to explore Coyle. He's at 5-2-5, and right now he's pretty much, you know, he's pretty much playing at a 5-2-5 contract.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly earning his contract this year. I mean, he's really had a really good season, I feel like. I mean, in the right deal, any of those guys, you know, other than McAvoy and Pasta, I mean, I would explore trading Marchand if that was, you know, if you flame out again. There's no way in hell they will, but right. I mean, I would explore it, you know, if you could get the right return. They won't, but you know.
Sure. All right. UFA list. We put this on X. We put this, I don't even know. What do you call it? Do you just call it a post now? You don't call it a tweet anymore, right?
Yeah. I still call it a tweet. Like, some people call it a Zeet, and I'm not fucking doing that. So
Zeet, fuck off. Yeah. Don't do that. So anyway, this Zeet right here was UFAs, the UFA list. And it's Jake DeBrusk, James Van Riemsdyk, Danton Heinen, Matt Grizzlick, Derek Forbort, Kevin Shattenkirk, Milan Lucic, Pat Maroon, Jason Megna, Anthony Richard, and Daniel Renouf. So out of these guys, who do you keep on that list?
Maybe Heinen for a veteran minimum. And other than that, I think everybody else can go screw.
I think I let everybody go unless he takes the veteran minimum, Heinen. Like, I think I let everybody go on that list. And you wouldn't believe how many. There were 9 or 10 people who said Lucic, keep Lucic. What? Well, I mean, really?
I mean, if you're going to keep a guy like that, like, keep Maroon. If you want a guy like that, keep Maroon. I mean,
give him a vet minimum next year for 1 year, fine.
I would do that. If you want a good locker room guy and a guy that's going to stick up for teammates and cause some, you know, some truculence in front of the net and so forth. Yeah. I mean,
potentially trade him mid at the deadline next year for someone who needs a veteran for a playoff run.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely. I would 100% do that. Yeah. But I mean, I feel like if you want, like, Justin Prazo can be that guy.
Sure.
Yeah. He can be that guy.
He's slow.
I mean, he's got some touch around the net and seems to, I think he said Pat Maroon was like one of his favorite players growing up. So if he wants to learn from him now, you know, if he wants to learn from him and pick up some of those same, you know, qualities and do, like, have it be him. If you want a big guy on your fourth line to irritate people and get to the front of that and cause trouble, like, you're not paying that guy anything. Like, have it be him. So
I'm at a point where I let even DeBrusk go. I let everybody walk on that list. Even DeBrusk, like, you already mismanaged that whole thing. It's already kind of a cluster. Like, who knows what you could have done if you tried to trade him or didn't trade him or overvalued him or whatever. But at this point, you know, he had enough years out of him. Like, at this point, I let him go. And I let the whole group of them go.
I think, see you later. I mean, I think you're right. Unless he's willing to take, you know, a longer term short money deal, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm letting him walk. I mean, maybe you could get him for, you know, 3 and something similar, 3 and 12, 3 and 10 and a half, somewhere in that range. I'll sign him up, but.
Fine.
You know, other than that, I'm not giving him 5 or 6 because he hasn't proved to be a consistent scorer. He just hasn't.
You're going to deal with the same shit again.
I know.
For another 3, 4, whatever. I mean, come on. Like, no, I'm just not doing it.
Yeah. They have some young guys that they need to give opportunities to in the top six. Like, your Lysels and your Markulovs and you know, John Beecher all of a sudden can't crack the lineup. So, you know, you got some young guys that probably want to get into the top six there, and you want to see what they can do. And Beecher should be in the lineup on a day-to-day basis. And then, you know, you take it from there, I guess.
Why isn't Beecher in the lineup?
I think he he had a really good start to the year, and then he trailed off, and he wasn't doing the hitting and so forth. But I don't know. I honestly don't know, because he's still big. He's still fast. He can still kill penalties. He can still win faceoffs, which has been a problem for them all year long. So, I mean, to me, if it was up to me, the fourth line would be Boqvist, Brazo, and Beecher. The killer bees. All bees. BBB. Yeah. Those guys. Because Boqvist is fast, Beecher is fast, and Brazo will get to the front of the net. You know, Boqvist and Beecher can both take draws. I think Beecher is a little bit better at than Boqvist is. And I think those there was the speed of those guys and the physicality of the speed of Boqvist and Beecher, and then the physicality of Brazo and Beecher can cause some turnovers. And that, I think that could be an effective fourth line. I don't think they'll do it, but I think that's what it should be.
I think so too. And to me, if he's not, if Beecher's not, hitting and sort of hit a slump there, that there's no one on the fourth line who hasn't done that.
Right.
Like to me, like play your first round pick, your young guy with size and speed, and get him to learn to do that every night. Like keep coaching him up, then throwing out, Oscar Steen, all these other schmoes. Like what to me, that's what I don't get about the Bruins, is that they give such a short leash to a John Beecher when I'm still watching the same horseshit with the other fourth liners not doing the same shit that Beecher did.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, this is what I don't, it's not like they have this veteran fourth line, like the Merlot line that's out there and does the job and so forth. Fine. But this is like a revolving door of knuckleheads.
Yeah.
Like just put Beecher out there.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. Cause they've done it with Lauko. They're like, oh, he's not playing up to the level that we expect him to be with the physicality. And so they sit him a game, but then they bring him back in. Like Beecher, like all of a sudden just was sent down, gone. See ya. Yeah,
gone.
And maybe it was a salary cap thing, but I don't know. I feel like Lauko and Beecher are probably making similar money. You know, it might not be, it's probably like fucking 70 grand maybe or something,
I know there's cap issues, but I feel like there's more guys like Farinacci and Lysell and guys. I feel like there's more guys they could have given a taste to through the season. I mean, they're second in the division. They have 91 points or whatever. Like they could have given more guys a chance to at least get a taste of it.
With
these other guys,
it also comes back to the whole, like, should they have moved a Forbort or a Grizzlick in the off season to give themselves more cap room? My answer is yes, they should have.
Yes.
But,
yes.
They didn't. They kind of hamstrung themselves. So, the salary cap issues that you're dealing with at this trade deadline that maybe prevented you from making some moves are your own damn fault. You can't say, oh, we did all we can do, and complain about the fact that there was, you couldn't make trades because you were up against the salary cap. Well, I mean, that's your fault. You knew that there were some ways that you could have probably attacked that in the offseason to create more room for yourself, and you chose not to do it. So you're stuck with the team you're stuck with.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't know. The general philosophy about young players, it makes me scratch my head, and that's that. Chirp number six. All right, Matt Rempe situation. Your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to say. He just got four games for, elbowing a guy. He's a huge kid. He was all the rage because he came up and he was basically fighting everybody in every single game. People were worried that he was going to get concussed and get CTE because he was just coming in and playing it like it was the 70s, like he was Tiger Williams or Bob Probert or something, just going out there. And he's like, oh, I'm going to fight anyone. I'll fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. And yeah, that gave a lift to the Rangers, and now they're in first. So, I mean, maybe that helped them out, but the kids' long-term prospects in the league, I don't think are going to be very good if he's out there, chucking knucks every single game. He is kind of running around. I mean, he's a big guy, so he can, but he's running around like kind of a goon out there. And so he's got Jersey for one and a few other teams that would like to give him a little payback. So it'll be interesting to see how that you know, shakes out going forward and possibly into the playoffs, you know, with him. But yeah, it's a kind of a strange situation because he's kind of like a throwback guy who's playing kind of an entirely different style than the rest of the the rest of the entire league.
Like some guy from the 70s out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got the wooden stick and, you know,
just
out there cross checking people and
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not a long shelf life for a guy like him. He's going to have to figure it out. They, you know, look, what comes around goes around in that league. Like someone's going to get paid back in some regard. Like it's not going to last. He's going to have to adjust and he'll probably be a line crosser at times like Tom Wilson and other guys. Like he'll be a line crosser, but he'll figure out how to space it out probably, or he's done, or he's just not going to survive.
Yeah.
So he's just going to have to figure that thing out. So I think he'll get, you know, he'll obviously be back in and he'll get more chances, but he's going to have to toe that line and figure that thing out. Chirp 7, goaltender situation for the Bruins going forward after this season. They have a lot of decisions to make because even the young guys, Brandon Bussey, Michael DiPietro, RFAs, you've got Swayman is an RFA with a huge, you know, another possible arbitration hearing, like, which he already doesn't like. And then Linus Allmark with a year left and maybe trading him or probably trading him. So how does it shake out, do you think?
Jeez. I mean, I don't know.
Would you trade both?
I mean, we talked about this a little bit. You could probably get a haul for both. I mean, you're probably looking at losing either Bussey or DiPietro because they're both waiver eligible after the season is over. So if one of those guys or if those guys don't end up in Boston, somebody's going to pluck one of them. You have to think. And they're both having really good seasons. Bussey had like a 36 save win either last night or the night before. So they're both playing well. I would, you know, if the package was right, I would really consider it because I think the Swayman arbitration thing is really going to be a sticking point. I think that's going to be a problem because they really pissed him off with the last arbitration hearing. So they're not going to give him any kind of a discount. So, I mean, you're looking at 7 million, 7.5, 8, 8.5. I mean, he could be wanting to get paid with the, you know, with the top goalies in the league. And I don't think the Bruins want to do that. He hasn't really shown up until this point, and it's partly their own fault, but he hasn't really shown up until this point that he's a 65 games a year guy. You know, he's,
do you think we are 3 months away from him demanding a trade?
It's a possibility. If those negotiations don't go anywhere, in the off season, I could see him getting moved at like the draft. I really could.
Sure.
And then, you know, then what do you do with Allmark? You know, do you re-sign Allmark? Does he want to stay? And then, you know, and then the other thing is you worry about the fact that in the playoffs, the last couple of years, he hasn't been good. So do you really want to re-sign a guy long-term that's had some problems in the playoffs? Or do you want to just, you know, bite the bullet and go with a couple of young guys? I mean, if they lose in the playoffs in the first round this year, there's going to be some big changes. And if that was the case, if they do lose in the first round of the playoffs this year with those two goalies, I am trading them both. I'm going young and I'm going into a full rebuild. Now, nobody wants to hear that. The Jacobs don't want to hear that. They probably won't like it. Sweeney, you know, probably won't want to do that. But if it was me and I was a general manager and that happened, because we talked about you know, maybe trading from the core and shaking some things up, I think that's the route you have to go. You trade both goalies, you bring up DiPietro and Bussey. Your goalie situation is solved. Those guys are both young. It's short money. And then you can spend to retool the roster when you trade some of the other veterans off.
Yes, and I think that eventually, I think they'll still sign Swayman and they'll trade Allmark.
I think so too.
Keep probably Bussey.
I would agree.
And then DiPietro will be gone. That would be, I guess, the most logical thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think will happen. But in a nuclear option, if they flame out in the first round, I'm looking to make big changes because it just hasn't. It just isn't working. It just hasn't been working.
You're crawling to the finish line. Like you're squeezing out every bit of this sort of. You need to change the nucleus.
The DNA of the team needs to change. Right. There needs to be.
It becomes 2015.
Yeah. You need a different voice, different voice in the room, a different voice from the coach. You need to get rid of Joe Sacco somehow lasted this whole way. I think if they flame out again in the first round, you have to seriously look at making some monumental changes to the roster and possibly the front office.
Yeah, you need to tear those dirty photos away from Joe Sacco that he has because it's time to move on.
Yeah.
All right, DraftKings Sportsbook is Boston's hometown sportsbook. It's live right here in Massachusetts. Bet local on all your favorite sports from the comfort of your own home with DraftKings. To celebrate, all new customers will receive up to $200 in bonus bets when you sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook using code ITR. You can now bet local on money lines, spreads, props, and more with one of America's top-rated sportsbooks. That's DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Sign up with the code ITR to get up to $200 in bonus bets to use now that mobile sports betting is live in Massachusetts. That's code ITR only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, call 800-327-5050 or visit helplinema.org to speak with a trained specialist free and confidentially 24/7. Must be 21 plus, physically present in Mass. Eligibility restrictions apply. Subject to regulatory licensing requirements. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Opt-in required. Bonus issued as free bets. Terms at DraftKings.com/MA.
All right, the beauty of the week. I'm going to go with Linus Allmark.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think Allmark, I thought he responded well to what happened. He used his veto ability in the trade and then came in the very next night. And credit to Montgomery for putting him out there right away. He plays really, really well. They win the game easily, and he says the right things afterwards. The team rallies around him, and I think it was handled by everyone the best way it could have been.
I agree with you. I think it was handled the right way. I think he handled it the right way. His teammates certainly seemed happy to have him still be around. So all that was very good. For the Benders this week, I'm going to go with the St. Louis Blues because they beat the bag out of the Bruins, and I still can't stand them from the Stanley Cup loss in 2019. I don't think they should have won the series. I think the Bruins were clearly the better team, and it is 100% sour grapes. I don't like them. I thought there was instances in that game where they got a little lucky. They got the offside call, the thing off the referee, and then Torrey Krug was running around all acting like he's not 5'6" out there, which bugged the shit out of me. I really wanted Frederick to just drop the gloves and drop him on his ass, but he's like shoving people into the posts and punching people after the scrums. That's because Colton Parayko is out there standing next to him and he's 6'5". It's like your little brother goes up and starts a fight and then runs and hides behind his big brother and then was like, yeah, come get me, you motherfucker, and he's like, it's just one of those things where I'm like, come easy there, Torrey. You're Conor McGregor. You're not, Muhammad Ali. You're a little tiny sprite of a guy. You're not, the greatest fighter of all time. So, that kind of bugged me. And that team as a whole bugs me. And it's too bad Binnington wasn't in because I would have liked to have seen a Swayman-Binnington goalie fight.
Here's Torrey Krug. Minus 51 the last two seasons combined. That contract, there's no better move they've made than to not fucking sign him again. And all those people who loved him because he's a little engine that could, and he's Torrey Krug, and he's the big hit on Robert Thomas and the whole thing, and the whole romanticism around him.
Yeah.
It was the 100% the right move. It stinks. That contract stinks. He stinks.
Yeah.
The whole thing stinks to high heavens. So screw you. And good, you had your night, fine, great. But in the grand scheme of things, nobody misses you, dude.
No.
Nobody misses you whatsoever. So, sorry. Centennial Season Spotlight. Sean Thorny. Talk about a guy who goes around and tries to fight guys. One of the best chirpers in the history of the game.
Yeah. He has
some of those YouTube
Yeah, he has the best chirp of all time right now. If you're watching on YouTube, you can pick. I believe you said this too. Who was it? Dale Weiss.
You can
pick the hand that I beat the fuck out of you with is one of the greatest lines, greatest chirps of all time. I mean, of all time.
100%.
Just 100%. And there's a guy that the Bruins could use right now. You want to talk about Pat right. Maroon? Throw him on the fourth line and let him. He's probably faster than Justin Brazzo. But
yes, probably right now.
But yeah, there's a guy whose leadership and toughness the Bruins 100% could use. So that Merlot line was a big reason, honestly, that the Bruins won the cup in 2011. Yeah. Campbell, mm-hmm. Paillet and Thornton were instrumental in that cup run and really changed the tenor of the series when Thornton got into it there because he sat out at the beginning, I believe, right?
He did, yeah. And I'll tell you, the biggest difference, if you look at this roster now and that roster then, was just they had a lot of tough guys on there that played with a lot of conviction, a lot of, they weren't taking any shit from people and that whole thing. I just feel like this team, when Vancouver does this whole biting the fingers and everything, I feel like this team wouldn't respond that way. But when Horton got hurt and when Burrows was biting guys and all that stuff, they didn't take it. And they just, they saw an opportunity and they just shoved it right up their ass.
Yeah. That team could beat you any kind of way. They could play a skill game. They could play a speed game. They could play a physical game. They could play a backyard fight game. They could play any kind of way you wanted to. And and a lot of it was because they had the largest man in the league on the back end, where Chara, if he lost, he didn't fight very often, but if he fought, you were in big trouble. And then they had basically their entire defensive core would fight. Every single one of the guys, except maybe Seidenberg, but he was a physical beast back there, even though he wasn't much of a fighter. Everybody else would fight. Boychuk fight, McQuaid, Ferentz, all those guys would fight. And then you had Campbell would fight, Thornton would fight, Lucic would fight. They had a bunch of guys on that team that would set the tone for a game. And I think the Bruins now, you're looking at Brad Marchand, for crying out loud, to set the tone, set the physical tone for the team. Like, that's a joke. He shouldn't have to do that as a guy who's fucking 5'10 or 5'9, whatever he is. Sure. He shouldn't be the one that's setting the physical tone for your team. That should be someone else. That should be someone else's job. Trent Frederick, I'm looking at you. That should be someone else's job. So they don't have the same kind of physicality, and it's bitten them in the ass. Like, they respond to it now instead of initiating it. And I think that's a big part of the problem. It's like, it's reactionary. It's like, oh, these guys are hitting us. Let's hit them back. It should be, we're going to punch you in the mouth, and then you have to respond to us. But it's not like that, because they don't have any guys really who can stand up for themselves, outside of a few.
They don't start that.
Yeah, they don't start it. They let it happen to them. And that's part of the issue. It was, teams know they can bully you, and they have been for a long time, Florida especially. They know they can take the physical game to you, and you don't have an answer for it. You don't.
Right. Right. You don't. And I 100% agree. Providence Bruins Beauty of the Week is the aforementioned John Beecher. 3 goals, 2 assists, 5 points, playing really well down there in his last 4 games, was called up as an emergency call-up and then sent right back down. And, he's really playing, it's almost to the point now where, is he really getting anything out of being down in Providence?
Yeah, like, I think they actually called him up again today on an emergency basis because I think JVR is sick. So he might be out of the lineup.
Beecher playing over JVR.
Me too.
I'm fine with that.
Me too.
100% fine with that.
So we'll see if he gets into the lineup tomorrow night. But, I agree with you, though. He hasn't. I don't think he's gaining anything now from playing in Providence. So he needs to kind of, it's an emergency call-up, so he probably will get sent down. But he should be up with the Bruins at this point, in my opinion.
100%. Prospect Spotlight. Hey, there's a new Bruins prospect, and it's Drew Bavaro. undrafted free agent, played the last two seasons with Notre Dame, the first two seasons of his collegiate career with Bentley University. He played 35 games this year with Notre Dame, 10 goals, 10 assists as a defenseman, right shot defenseman, big kid, and you know, pretty good player. Another college free agent, as the Bruins have to kind of get into that pool because of their lack of draft picks, especially when they have only a fourth, fifth, and sixth coming up in this draft. Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised they didn't try to get a couple more and kind of load up there. But Bavaro looks like a kid that, you know, has a chance. He's 23. He's a little older. But he has a chance anyway to join Providence now in an ATO and see what you get.
Yeah, and then I think he signed a one-year deal, so he'll be with Providence next year after the ATO. And it's another kind of big guy with some offensive upside, which seems to be kind of the way they're trending. I don't hate it. And maybe you can coach the physicality into him in front of the net. I don't know how physical he plays in college. I honestly haven't seen any Notre Dame college hockey games this year, so I can't really comment on his style of play other than his stats. But, you know, some offensive upside like Lowry and a big kid with, you know, should have a long stick, long rangy stick like Carlo and Lowry and Lindholm. So now you got a bunch of guys who are, you know, 6'2", 6'3", or bigger and, you know, with some good defensive sticks, you know, hopefully, you know, that leads to a good defensive play in your own zone and, you know, they can help you out on the offensive end as well.
Well, as you know, a long-rangey stick is a real weapon.
It sure is.
And that is what Drew Bavaro has. All right, so it's week ahead for the Bruins Thursday tomorrow night on March the 14th at the Montreal Canadiens. And then on Saturday, it'll be the Flyers at home. And then at home again against the Ottawa Senators on Tuesday the 19th. So this stretch here is definitely with a game against the Canadiens and then again, two games against the Flyers and Senators. It's a chance to get 6 points here.
It is. The Flyers are playing well and the Flyers are kind of in the playoff hunt there where they're kind of battling around. So they're going to be desperate. So you have to kind of rise to the level. Plus Torts is going to have them playing hard that his teams always play hard. You know, that one will be a tough one, but I mean, you should win the other two. Ottawa seems to give you trouble though, for whatever reason.
They do. I mean, they're young and they have good legs.
They have good, you know, offensive skill. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that one goes, but, they do give you trouble. So, you know, a pretty good test to see if the Bruins have kind of shored things up here defensively.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is definitely with the Flyers and Senators, especially that you can show that if you can really clamp down defensively, you can beat these teams, you know, smother these teams and win. And that's kind of the way they need to play as we go forward. Mm-hmm. Go to InsideTheRink.com for Bruins Benders merchandise, shirts and hoodies and hats and mugs and all sorts of good items. And then follow us on social media at Bruins Benders. Interact with us on X as we do the game updates during the games and subscribe to the Inside the Rink YouTube page. Until next time, go Bruins.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.